You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and the best interviews from around the world of horse racing. This episode is brought to you by the Racehorse Owners Association, by Thoroughbred Racing Commentary's Global Rankings in partnership with the Saudi Cup, and by the Fitzdares Club. Good morning, welcome to the show. It is Monday, April the 12th, and of course, because it is Craven and Greenham week, you know, where all the flat blue blood start to come out, and the fact that today is the next phase of the lifting of the government's lockdown, which means you can go outside and drink beer in a pub garden, it's snowing all across the country. Absolutely arctic conditions. I'm told it's going to get better. It had better do, because it's a busy week of racing ahead. And of course, all that off the back of the delights of Saturday and that truly historic moment, which we'll be reflecting on very shortly. Do please make sure that you stay tuned today, because I'll be talking in 10 minutes or so to John Berry, who lost his beloved Roy Rocket on Friday morning, and whose wife Emma penned a beautiful tribute to him that was published on Saturday morning. He wasn't the best horse, but he was one of the most popular, and his loss will hit an awful lot of people very hard. But if you ever want to hear an example of what one animal can mean to one person, John's reflections on the life and death of Roy Rocket are hugely, hugely powerful. It was a very powerful weekend for the sport, possibly one of the most powerful ever, with the victory of Rachel Blackmore in the Grand National, becoming the first woman to win the world's most famous race. Lee Motter said, as the senior writer from the Racing Post, "Lee, so much has been said, written, so much of it beautifully done. How did you feel as you drove home, embarked on the long journey home on Saturday evening?"
I was feeling that I had seen something extremely important, Nick. I was feeling almost guilty that I'd been there and so many hadn't. I think of all these meetings that we've been to in the last 12 months, this was one I felt that it would have been so great to have a huge crowd there to see history made, because it did feel important. It did feel significant. I think all through my racing life, women have been riding in the Grand National for most of it anyway. In fact, I was born in 1975, the year when they were allowed to ride for the first time in the race. But it has felt for most of those years like a distant dream, the idea of a woman riding the winner of the Grand National. But I think what's changed in these last few years is that what once seemed to be distant dreams now seem to be extremely attainable. You have a situation whereby Rachel Blackmore could well be Ireland's champion jockey this season. Holly Doyle is 5-1 to be champion jockey on the flat this season. You have a situation where Holly Doyle, you could easily see landing a very big job. I remember it's not that long ago when, I think it was when Johnny Murta left Ballydoyle, Nick, we did a piece in the Post where we looked at the potential contenders for the role. And I remember the time I was asked to include Kathy Gannon, because it was felt that we should be putting in a woman as a potential candidate, even though realistically, and Kathy would be the first to say herself, she wasn't expecting a call from Aidan O'Brien to say, would you be my next stable jockey? Whereas now, nobody would question it if you said that Holly Doyle could be contender for that role. No one would question it if someone said that Willie Mullins was poaching Rachel Blackmore to be stable jockey. These are outstanding riders, and everything has changed. Everything has changed. And I think by winning the Grand National, the race that towers above all others in our sport, and you can't overestimate enough how big it is relative to everything else, to Cheltenham, to the Derby, to Royal Ascot, the Grand National is the one. And for a female jockey to have won that race, as I think many people would say, the best jockey riding in that race, and I don't think that's over egging the pudding to say that Rachel Blackmore is the best jockey riding at the moment. I think it was a marvellous thing. And I think, like many of us, I drove home that night feeling better about the sport, feeling proud of the sport, that this is a sport in which women and men compete against each other on equal terms. And we shouldn't believe that everything is perfect now. there aren't many Rachel Blackmores coming through, and there are still many things that need to be tackled before we get true equality. But this was hugely significant, and it was a joy to witness.
And the point was made to me yesterday by Lucinda Russell and others that there are as many young girls as young boys, if not more young girls, riding horses and riding in pony races and coming through the system. But now that whole generation of young girls will be able to believe more readily, will they not, Lee, that getting a big job at a major yard and being right up there near the top of the tree is attainable, whereas before it would have seemed almost a fantasy.
Well, that's absolutely right. If you see it, you can believe it. You can identify with what you see on television. And it's to draw a parallel, Nick, on Saturday as well, as I've made a point in my column, there was a similarly, not quite as big a win, because I say the Grand National is so huge, but in Australia, the Doncaster Mile, the biggest, one of the very biggest races in the Australian calendar, was won by Jamie Carr, a jockey who's taken Melbourne by storm this Australian flat season. He's set to be their champion jockey in Victoria, and she won that race. She was the first woman to ride a winner in Godolphin Silks, and she spoke about her reaction to winning this race, and she did make that point that she says that she gets lots of people saying, my daughter looks up to you and wants to be Jamie Carr when she's older. That's so surreal to me. The success is great and I'm obviously loving it, but to be able to give a little girl inspiration for the future is unbelievable. And that's what people like Jamie Carr and Rachel Blackmore and Bryony Frost are doing. They're making people believe that something is possible that once wasn't possible. And we've gone from that stage when you make a reference in my column to a past BBC piece on women riders in the Grand National, where Julian Wilson, who was great broadcaster and was speaking as things were at the time, but he spoke about pretty Geraldine Reece, proved that it could be done when she completed the course in 1982. But racing is one equestrian sport, said Julian, where females remain unlikely to break through, at least in the saddle. And in the last few years, that has changed. I said, there's still more work to be done because there aren't lots of Holly Doyles and Rachel Blackmores competing at that level. But who knows, in 10 years' time, we may be looking at a completely different picture again. And if that is the case, it will be thanks to people like Holly Doyle, Hayley Turner, Rachel Blackmore, Bryony Frost. And they are doing a great thing for horse racing.
Well, Saturday was a very happy day for horse racing in so many respects. But it began on a really sad note with the news from John and Emma Berry's yard in Newmarket of the death of their very popular stable star, I think I could safely call him, Roy Rocket. I call him a star not because he was necessarily the most able horse in training, nor indeed in John's own yard, but because with his extraordinary record at Brighton and with his indefatigable spirit, he'd become a real public hero of a horse, and he was much beloved of everybody at the stable. John joins me now. John, your wife Emma penned a really beautiful tribute to the horse on Saturday, and it was just a great example of what horses can mean to people. It must have been a very difficult weekend for you.
It's been quite difficult for a while, really. Coming out this morning and not being there, and it's going to remain the same. But time is a great healer, and I mean, even he had a wonderful life, and I think he had a wonderful life right up until about the last 20 seconds, because Friday morning we went out totally normally, and he's such an enthusiastic workhorse. If you'd taken him to the bottom of Railway Land where we were and let go of him, he'd have just bounded up, loving it, the same as he was, but as it was after about 2 furlongs, he just faltered. And, you know, once in a while a human drops dead, and once in a while a horse drops dead, and it's normally when they're doing something. And, he's fortunately for me, I had, I'm talking totally selfishly, I realised instantly what was happening, because he's not a horse that would ever drop a bridle or do his exercise lazily, and I was able to, and you know, we weren't going flat out, so I was able to pull him up and dismount before he went down, but it happened so quickly, and But yeah, I mean, even saying that he loved his life and he loved it to the last minute, I mean, in a way that makes it worse because, you know, the horse is not enjoying life. They're not missing much by dying, but the horse is, you know, just the sun's shining here at the moment and he ought to be walking around the yard picking grass, but he isn't. But, you know, I grew up on a farm and, you know, my father had left the army before the time I was born, but on a military background, and two things a military background and a growing up on a farm do, growing with animals all around you from as far as you can remember, is that you're not sentimental about death as a concept. You know that, and the military thing, you know that, I mean, in a way, my father probably never, in his head, but he'd never left the army. My parents both grew up in the war, and it shaped the way they thought, and the way your parents think shapes the way you think. And a farming background, I've, you know, I'm not sentimental about death. I know that where you've got life, you'll always have death. And the only option of not, the only way you can not have death is not have life. And that all humans and all animals are going to die at some point. But, and for him to die, it was a great way to go. You know, I didn't have to watch him decline and then have to play God and make the decision for him. But I just wish it had been about 15 years time rather than now.
Yeah, I'd like to say I fully understand, but I think only you can fully understand your relationship with this horse. I was sort of thinking over the weekend, John, what it was that people really warmed to, and I look at his page now on the Racing Post, and I see breeder John Berry, owner McCarthy and Berry, trainer John Berry. What I can fill in is work rider every day, John Berry. And in a sport that is aggressively commercial at times, it's that bond between one person and one horse who can achieve regularly, even at a fairly low level. I think anybody can identify with that and warm to that, can't they?
Yes, yeah. I mean, he was probably, and he was probably as... Yeah, you know, speaking to John Egan yesterday, and John said he's as close to a human as any horse could be, and you know, and again, he's been big, you know, he was born 11 years ago, conceived 12 years ago, planning the mating the year before, you know, well in advance of conception. He's been on my radar for a long time, but you know, not just in theory. He was born in France. He arrived here as a yearling 10 years ago. Gus, my dog, he arrived. They both arrived about the same time, and Gus is, you know, he's now like an older dog now, and you know, they've both, Gus and Roy, both just been wandering around the yard for a hell of a long time, and the people involved, Larry and Iris McCarthy, I've trained from sort of the McCarthy family nearly as long as I've been training. You know, just the most wonderfully supportive people that. And I mean, the other person involved in the story was Tony LeBrock, because I still own Roy's dam. She's, her last foal's a 2-year and haven't broken her yet. She's here by Dunedin, probably break her in quite shortly. I think Minnie's is in retirement. She's living as a retired broodmare now. She wasn't covered after having foaling 2 years ago. She's about probably 22 now, maybe. I bought her as a yearling and I sold her to Tony LeBrock, who lives in Jersey, and I trained her for Tony as a 2-year-old, and she raced in Jersey for about 6 years and won a stack of races for Tony there. She won the Jersey Guineas, Jersey Derby, and Tony so sweetly at the end of her racing career said, if you'd like her as a broodmare, you can have her. And I hadn't owned a broodmare before, but he knew I loved pedigrees and everything, and so it's Tony's kindness. And I've actually had a missed call from Tony this morning, which I'll call him back. He will be. So Tony had the dam. He's had grey panel. He's got white valiant now. Two of her other foals. He's the Minnie's mystery family is part of his family as well. And you know, Tony's been a wonderful friend. As I say, it's probably more than 21. It's probably 21 years or something since. Minnie's mystery's been on Tony's and my radar, and you know, it's just, you know, it's for the fact that you've got people like that involved, and it emotionally is bound up. We're all bound up together, and you know, for everyone. And Roy, you know, he'd had a lot of publicity, and he'd become a very popular horse, a very well known horse. Social media helps, and the Racing Post helped, and at the races, and you know, a lot of things. A lot of people felt they knew him very well. Anytime anyone came to the yard, he was always there to say hello. And you know, I think for an awful lot of people who've seen him race, I've been so touched by the people that have contacted me, and you know, people have said I've seen him race, and even people have said I never saw him race. I wasn't on TV, but I did want to get there one day and see him race. You know, it's he meant an awful lot to everyone, and you know, quite apart from the sadness of a horse, as I say, arguably should be out there in the sunshine this morning and isn't. You know, for a lot of people, it's a chapter in life it's a very happy chapter in life that's closed for good, and that's happened very, very suddenly.
And that sadness that you're feeling now is as intense as it is, I think, John, and I can't speak for you, but it strikes me that it's as intense as it is because the happiness that he provided was so great in a sort of a whole lot of very anonymous races and results through the season that don't really strike a chord with anyone. You know, I quite clearly, memories of Roy Rocket will be watching the sheer delight that people took in him when he was winning on a boiling hot sunny day at Brighton in the summer with shirt sleeves and ice creams.
Yes, I mean, nothing summed it up better than it was three years ago when he'd won three races that summer, when he won the RRA Flat Special Achievement Award, and Billaston Brook had won the 1,000 guineas and the wonderfully popular filly. She was one of the nominees. Take Cover, a nominee. You know, there were some terrific horses, and the jump version that season was won by the retiring Cue Card, and you know, and that's not one person picking it, that's done on a vote of the membership. And you know, he touched a chord with an awful, awful lot of people. And yes, as I say, it's a bolt from the blue. But you know, it's that's animals for you, and you know, to that, you know, it's the what Anthony Hopkins said in Shadowlands. You know, the pain now is part of the pleasure then. That's the deal, and that applies at least as much to one of our relationships with animals as it does to humans. And you know that signed up. And so there is an alternative. There is an alternative of never having the pain now, and that's never having the pleasure then. And you know, for people that love animals, that's you know, that's an alternative that just isn't there. No, you'd, and but you know, the more pleasure there was then, and the more pain there is now. But that's just a deal, and that's what we sign up to. And it's, yeah, I mean, I couldn't envisage a life without animals. So this isn't the first time. I've been crying over the death of an animal, and it won't be the last.
John, I do appreciate you talking to me this morning, and yeah, I, as you say, he's given so much pleasure and to so many people, and I know everybody will be with you and with all your staff as well in the next few days, and hoping very much that that the John Berry Yard will be in lights again very soon.
Nick, that's very kind, and I must just say it's so staff, it's hit everyone. Everyone was in floods of tears on Friday morning, and if I didn't ride him, it was normally Yana, and Yana and I rode out this morning, and we both looked at each other, and I said, "How are you doing?" I said, "I'm struggling, to be honest," and she said, "So am I." And this 3 days later, we suddenly both of us with tears running down our faces. No, but you're very, very, very kind, Nick. Thank you very much.
John Berry on his beloved Roy Rocket, and Lee Mottisette is still with me. Lee, there's very little we can really add. John's words were very powerful.
It breaks your heart. I think we knew anyway how much John and Emma and all the team there adored Roy Rocket, as they adored all their horses. But to hear him so cut up about the horse's loss just tells you how much that horse meant to him. I had a wonderful morning there. It was 3 years ago now, watching John with the horse on a summer morning at the yard, and their relationship. They were like a double act, and he spoke about him like a child. He talked about how Roy basically had the free run of the yard, did what he wanted to do, went into the tack room, got his own feed if he wanted food, and he did make clear that it was a nature and nurture thing, and that a lot of Roy's character was down to nurture, because his mother was a mare who very much knew her own mind. But the nurture bit came from the fact that as a surrogate father, John had probably spoiled him a little bit and let him do whatever he wanted. And it was just wonderful watching him. It's great to see horses like that who don't compete at the top tier becoming so popular. Roger Ingram recently lost his stable star, Crystal Palace Cat. And that produced an outpouring of great sadness from people in racing, as has this. And we're coming off the Grand National, Nick, which is always the point in the calendar where people who dislike horse racing and would wish that horse racing didn't take place, they use the Grand National as their vehicle for saying that this is a cruel sport and that the people don't care. Anybody who listens to John Berry talking there on this podcast today can see how much people care. He's talking about that horse as if he's lost a very, very close friend, a loved one. And that's what I think racing is generally really like. And I think we will all have enormous sympathy for John and for Emma, for all the team, because we know how much they cared.
Well, Lee, we keep our eyes trained now for the moment on Newmarket, because tomorrow marks the beginning of the Craven meeting. 3 days, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Hopefully it'll warm a little before then. One trainer with a whole glut of entries at this fixture and into the weekend at Newbury is Lambourne-based Charlie Hills, trainer, of course, of Battash, amongst others. But he's got a good selection of young horses lined up for this week. And he began by talking to me about a horse he has high hopes of tomorrow.
Looking forward to running Mustessa Beck in a condition race, 7 furlong condition race. His work's been really, really pleasing me. And looks a tight race, only 5 runners. But it looks a good starting point for the season for him. You know, obviously he's only had the one start last year. He's just been a little bit sort of mentally just a little bit immature. So we didn't really want to sort of put him in the guineas because it would tempt us maybe to running him and thinking that would be something to be a little bit too soon for him. So we're going to try and play the softly approach. You know, if we happen to run a good race tomorrow, then opens things up a bit later on in the year. But, you know, like I said, I think he certainly looks above average.
And Mujbar is your leading 2,000 guineas hopeful at the moment. Are you going to run him in the free handicap?
Well, yeah, I mean, I was just speaking to a few people yesterday. They're walking across the race course. They said they'd never known the it's so quick, so you know it's a question mark whether we want to be running on him on, you know, fast ground early on. He only ran on it once last year, and he was slightly disappointed at Doncaster, but you know he had a terrible draw and raced on his own, so we did have another excuse for that run. But obviously his winnings have been on soft ground, so we've been pleased with his training up till now. He's going to hold up entry in the Greenham as well, so I'll speak to Angus Gold, and we'll sort of try and make a few decisions this morning.
Of course, every day is crucial at this time of year, and the Greenham's been pushed back another day to Sunday. Do you think that'll make a material difference?
Well, you know, it's a day nearer to the main event. You know, it's less than 2 weeks. It might change a few people's plans. It's not ideal. You know, giving a horse a hard race early on in a season like this, less than 2 weeks before, you know, a classic, is probably not ideal. So I think it might just change a few plans.
And obviously everybody will want to know how your big stable stars are. I know Battash is out for a little while. What's the sort of timeline with him?
Well, yeah, I'm going to take the opportunity when I go up to Newmarket tomorrow, go and have a look at him. Dennis LeBron's been happy with him the last couple of weeks, and I'm hoping the plan is to get him back in the yard maybe the end of this week, beginning of next. So it's encouraging news.
Does that make Royal Ascot completely impossible then, if he comes back this week?
No, I don't think so. I think there's 1 year where he won the Temple Stakes. I think he's only in the yard 6 weeks before he won that race. So, I've still got plenty of time. It might be a blessing in disguise, you know, that you just come in a bit later, especially missing all this weather we're having.
And the other horses that have been around the world and been doing bits and pieces like Tilsit and Akardam, are they all back and ready to go again?
Yeah, they are. Tilsit's, you know, he's got holds an entry in the lock-in, so we're probably aiming for that. You know, straight mile should suit him good. And Akardam, he came back. He lost plenty of weight, actually. So we can probably freshen him up and find something a little smaller, a little conditioned race somewhere if we can, and try and build him back up to... group level.
And you've got plenty of slightly lower profile horses running this week as well, but are there any diamonds in the rough there, any that we should look out for that you think will really excel?
I look forward to running Gareth. He runs in a 5 furlong handicap at Newbury, and he missed all last year, came back and won at Wolverhampton, and he's been group 2 placed as a 3-year-old, so be nice to think you can get back to that level.
Well, a few little interesting tidbits there from Charlie Hills, particularly how much he was looking forward to running Garris this week. Also, the ground being quite quick at Newmarket and the impact that might have on horses not running over the next few days. Amazing, given the snow everywhere. And also the fact that Bat Ashley might be back for Royal Ascot still. It's not impossible.
No, which would be fantastic. I mean, Batash is one of the pin-up stars of the flat season. Great he's still around, and it would be wonderful if he did get to Royal Ascot, Nick. I must say, I went out this morning at 8 o'clock. I drove the couple of miles from where I live to Epsom Downs, and I was out walking up the home straight around Tattenham Corner. And 8 days from Epsom's first meeting of the season, the track was covered in snow, which was a very strange sight indeed when you think, get your head around the fact that we had the first recognised Derby trial of the season yesterday, and we're at a point where the home of the Derby is covered with snow. It doesn't really feel like the first big week of the flat, which this is, of course, with Newmarket and Newbury. Just looking through some of those entries for the Newmarket races, it indicates to me a very muddled classic picture so far. I can't recall seeing 19 horses enter for the Craven before, which is what we have at the moment. Now, that fear will be heavily whittled down, partly because some stables have numerous representatives or potential representatives at the moment, but it is a muddled picture. By the end of this week, we should know more, but I suspect looking at the anti-post markets for the 1,000 and 2,000 guineas, we may not know too much more. I think many of the big contenders will be staying at home this week, so I'm not quite sure how informative these races will be. But they're races that will go on until Sunday with Ayr, Scottish Grand National fixture, and the big Greenham Day at Newbury having been moved to Sunday to take them out of the day in which the Duke of Edinburgh's funeral will take place in Windsor, which I think was a very sensible move by the sport.
Yeah, and there's still enough racing going on Saturday around the time which is dedicated to the funeral, but it's just not the high-profile stuff. So the roadshow keeps rolling, if you like.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, it will be that Sunday will be a super day of racing still. It will move from Saturday to Sunday. But it's still one of those great days when, whether you're a flat enthusiast, a jumps enthusiast, or like the two of us, you love both. You really have a tremendous menu of action in front of you. That contrast between things like the Scottish National and the Greenham on the same day, I think just underline why British racing and Irish racing are so special, that we do have these two codes that are so popular and bring so much pleasure.
Lee, thank you. I just need a tip from you for whenever, really?
Well, I'm going to stay with today's action, Nick. I'm going to go to the 2 o'clock at Huntingdon and suggest that iconic muddle for the Team Moore, for Gary Moore's stable, might well be successful in the 2 o'clock, the Racing TV Novices Handicap Chase, and longer term to Saturday. No big racing here on Saturday, but there will be in Australia, second day of the championships at Randwick. Tremendous matchup between a Dabe and Very Elegant. Oh. And I'm going to be very unpatriotic, and just, I think Very Elegant will maintain her recent superiority over a Dabe.
And I think James Willoughby's rankings at the end of the week might confirm that as well. That was Monday, April the 12th. We'll see you again tomorrow. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with Fitzdares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary.